সেই অকার মূত্র ভুলে স্নান করে কুতুহলে, শেখার মূর্তে ভুলে স্নান করে কুতুহলে, পবিত্র বলে আমনে করো, পবিত্র বলে আমনে করো, বনে বা গৃহে বা থাকো শেখারে দূরে রাখো, রে বা থাকো শেখারে দূরে রাখো, যার মূত্রে তুমি আমি জ্বালি, যার মূত্রে তুমি আমি জ্বালি, চারিয়া খাপাতিয়া বাসা যুগালা বিলাস রস, চারিয়া খাপাতিয়া বাসা যুগালা বিলাস রস, সাগরে খরো হাসনান খেলে, সাগরে খরো হাসনান খেলে, রূপারাগুনা পাই এ ভক্তি বিনোদ চায়, রাগুনাতা বিনোদ চায়, দেখিতে যুগালা রাস সিন্ধু, দেখিতে যুগালা রাস সিন্ধু, জীবন সর থাকা করে সর্ব জীব চিত্ত হরে, জীবন সর থাকা করে সর্ব জীব চিত্ত করে, সে সাগরে রেখা বিন্দু, সে সাগরে রেখা বিন্দু, কাম ক্রোধায় দিখরি বাহিরে সে সবায়রি, কাম ক্রোধায় দিখরি বাহিরে সে সবায়, আছে একা গুদা শত্রু ধাবা, আছে এক গুদা শত্রু ধাবা, আছে এক গুদা শত্রু ধাবা,
স্টার্টিং উইথ লাস্ট অ্যাঙ্গার, অল দিস টেকেন টুগেদার কিপ আউট দিস ফোজ টেরর, অ্যান্ড অনাদার গ্রেট এনিমি ইউ হ্যাভ, হিজ নেম ইজ ডিসিটফুলনেস, অ্যান্ড হি ইজ আ গ্রেট হিপোক্রিট, দিস ডোঙ্কি লাইক ফর্ম, the topmost swindler. Oh, my mind, these heavy words please carry. Forgetting that this is donkey urine, do you bathe in so-called ecstasy, mentally thinking that it's purifying? If in the forest or at home you stay, keep this donkey cheater far, far away. Its urine burns both you and me. Reject the cheating dress in Radha Krishna's pastimes zest. Just bathe yourself in oceans and pastimes ocean's jest. What Rupa and Raghunath found, Sri Bhaktivinod looks, seeing Radha Krishna's nectarian ocean defined. Life becomes complete. Everyone's heart becomes stolen away just by a drop of that ocean.
Are cheta prodyata kapata kutinatiya bharakhara kshiran mutre snatva dahasikata matamanam abhimam sadatvang gandharava giridari pada prema vilasat Shuddham bodho snatva smama binatharam mam cha sukaya.
So today we're starting 2 days of discussions on verse number 6. My dear mind, you've embraced the path of self-realization, yet you foolishly think that you're cleansing yourself by bathing in the pretentiously fierce qualities of deceit and fault-finding. which are compared to impure donkey urine. Factually, you're incinerating yourself and dragging an infinitesimal spirit soul like me into the conflagration. Stop this suicidal course. Dive into the immortal ocean of sublime ambrosia that awaits you in loving devotional service at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Resuscitate my very being and thus give both of us endless happiness. Vrindavane ramanareti prasiddha bhumo tatrapi krishna balarama suparamule gyanam param paramai krishna sudharma chuktam dandasta deva prabhupada namo namaste namo bhakti vinodaya sachid ananda namine gaura shakti swarupaya rupanu govarayate vande sri rupa sanatano raghu yugo sri jiva gopalako. So this describes some advice to someone who might be able to subdue his lust, control that, or influence upon that. The obstacle of lusty desires, as previously mentioned before, are multifarious. One desires to enjoy material life and may do so using a spiritual institution or spiritual principles as a facade. Because one is able to, this is what today is discussing now, more subtle aspects of it. You may be able to free yourself from attraction to the opposite sex and the entanglements that occur there. But then there's a flip side of the coin. If you're not attached to Krishna consciousness, just like yesterday when I was describing about the fact of the matter that if you have lusty desires, that is actually perverted reflection of the spirit soul's desires to satisfy and serve the Supreme Lord. To the extent that you engage in association of sadhus and experience the higher taste, only to that much as you've applied it personally, only to that much you can factually realize relief from the pangs of lusty desires. Lusty desires come from the bodily identification of the body itself. Any subtle affiliation with that, subtle or gross affiliation with that, will produce a nagging discomfort, which means you want to enjoy your senses. And it'll affect your Krishna consciousness, for sure. Krishna consciousness means to satisfy Krishna's senses. And when the senses are not satisfied, in your particular ashram or your particular situation, material situation or living situation, when you find your needs, quote-unquote needs, bodily necessities, sense gratification not met, then you feel that I need something else, or I need to engage my mind in something else, or I need to be a bit independent to satisfy my needs. Thus you remove yourself from the protective association of devotees and try to act independently, because you're demonstrating a lack of desire to discipline yourself, a lack of desire to restrain your propensities to enjoy. Pravitra esha bhutanam, it is a nature of living entities to condition living entities since time immemorial to try to enjoy their senses. But nirvritishtu mahafalam, controlling it, the lower self, by the higher self, is where you get the highest rewards in human existence. Nirvritishtu mahafalam. But it's not easy. One requires inspiration. One requires a practical, workable model in order to get free. I was mentioning that, for example, with regard specifically to brahmacharya or other renunciations, sannyas, etc. You require a suitable atmosphere for nourishment. You require association, preferably someone who you love to be with, who inspires you in your renunciation by injecting Krishna consciousness. It's a partnership. Another brahmachari with another brahmachari in a specific situation where both of you have a strategy for preaching and distributing Krishna consciousness that reflects your realization. You can only preach what you've realized. And you're getting results from it, from the public. Reciprocation, you're seeing that you're doing something for the previous acharyas practically, and you're feeling happy with that contribution. Then you have to have a type of So that's an external atmosphere, preaching that's giving results. Then that gives satisfaction when you actually see that although it's a struggle, although it's not easy, although it may be tiresome, wearisome, still we see that there's some wonderful fruits coming from this preaching. And the public is grateful for it. That's needed. Otherwise, if you're not getting any results from the public you're preaching to, or from those who are supposed to protect you, then you don't feel encouragement to remain in a brahmachari preaching atmosphere or renunciation or something. You feel like, well, and then come, if you don't have that supportive atmosphere, then on the other time, on one hand, you're not being supported by your superiors or encouraged. Neither do you have friends that encourage you. Then on the other hand, you're being attacked by lust, anger, greed, etc., etc., these other enemies. So you're having doubts that I can maintain myself by myself. I don't have anybody to help me maintain my renunciation. Can I do it myself? Well, I'm doubting it. I remember one boy at a ex-Gurukuli reunion in 1992 in Los Angeles. These boys were 22, 23 years old, and they were outside working some job, etc., etc., and out of Los Angeles. And they chant 8 rounds a day or something, and they associate with the devotees when they can. Weekends and evening times like that, they'll come and they'll attend Gaurarti if they want to, and they'll be with their devotee friends like that. Maybe not so much in the morning. Some of them in the morning also. I discussed with some of them. Depends on their schedule. Anyway, one boy said, when I was 14 years old in the Gurukul, I thought I'd like to be this 13, 14 years old. I thought I'd like to grow up and become a sannyasi in ISKCON and travel and preach and try to help people. But by the time I turned 15, 16, I realized that I wasn't going to make it. It meant that his own lusty material desires coming to the fore made him realize that I'm a lot weaker spiritually than I think I am. You can't pretend. You can't put yourself in a platform of pretension where you're pretending to tote some party line or some activity that you feel that I'm not comfortable with. I'm just not natural. It's not my natural nature. You should require an atmosphere by which you build you identify your weaknesses, attack it through shastra. I discussed that yesterday. Understanding your specific weaknesses, understanding your specific strengths, capitalizing on your strengths by increasing it through Krishna conscious vision and association. At the same time, identifying practically your specific anarthas, focusing yourself to analyze these anarthas from terms of Prabhupada's books and the concrete suggestions of your well-wishers, your spiritual masters, your protectors, your superiors. In this way, try to practically identify what you can really realistically do about. Then you have to involve yourself with some type of self-discipline, whereby you identify some practical action that must be done if I want success within a certain limited amount of time in this way. Self-discipline. I'm going to have to do this. And I have to do this daily, or I have to do this weekly, or whatever. It requires some commitment. That commitment is practical. So in this way you make... Now, you have to ask yourself, gee, can I do that? If I commit myself, well, what can I do it? Well, I can do it because I have this strength, or I can do this because somebody will help push me to it, and I live with them. Or, no, I can't do that because I may want to do it, but I just can't get the willpower to get up and do it, or I can't do it. So no, I probably won't be able to do it. But if I do this, then maybe it can improve. Let me try that. In this way, you have to try to work. You're not caving in to your lower nature. You're acknowledging it exists. You're facing it. At the same time, you're working on trying to eliminate that. You're working on trying to eliminate that influence of your lower nature and trying to purify it. You have to be able to say, so what? It means, well, I'm like that. Well, why? You have to ask yourself. It's self-critical. Well, why am I like that? I'm not happy with me being like that. So you have to encourage yourself to become better. At the same time, you have to be realistic as well. Don't bite off more than you can chew. If you set a higher standard that you can't make, you'll become depressed. When you can't make that level, then you simply give up the whole process. Some devotees give up the whole chanting, the whole association of devotees. Either I become a Paramahansa or I'll bloop. They can't set a middle ground for themselves. And they can't build themselves up slowly by working at their anarthas or their lower self in such a way that they actually become better gradually. They can't do that. They can't build up their self-esteem. They have to make short-term plans that are realistic, practical, verifiable, that they can see themselves. And this way they get enthusiasm. Well, I was much worse 5 months ago. Now that I've changed myself due to this determination that I can't remain the way I am, and I've changed like this, then I've found that I'm less, or I was lusty in the evening, and I just decided that for my own protection, I'm going to chant Gopinath Bhajan. I'm going to make a vow to do that. And when I do that, wow, all of a sudden, I'm able to embrace Krishna in the night very nicely in the mind. I'm able to, with a great sense of relief, I'm able to embrace Krishna in the night. And therefore, I'm less attacked in my mind at night. In this way, there should be some practical results, how one can see how one is able to control the lower self. So even if you can, there's another thing that happens for those who are able to do so temporarily or something, that these people are well, they can organize their day nicely. They can organize themselves. So they have a tendency to be proud of that. Sometimes there's a tendency to project oneself as a natural leader amongst the other renunciates or other group of devotees that you live in. The reputation falls on one that you are, these are the next things that's in the next shlokas. You're a good devotee. The reputation of a good devotee comes. This is the next thing. So the idea of it, you may think, all right, now I'm not lusty so much. Women don't blow my mind as much. And I'm not attached to developing that kind of a conjugal relationship with them. Or I'm not comfortable around with them, living with them. So I'm happy without them. All right. So lust does not bother me. All right. But then there's another thing. He's mentioning in this verse, if you've been able to, renunciates that have been able to free themselves of lust, because lust is a very big thing to get over. If you can actually get over it, your liberation is, Prabhupada mentioned that if you can actually give up the association of women and the attachment to that and the consequences of that, you're 75% liberated. This is also quoted in the Brahmachari book. Now, it's not a joke. You have to do that with a higher taste. I was referring to that yesterday. You actually have to love Krishna. Loving Krishna comes from hearing and chanting and practically serving Krishna, serving the spiritual master, like I said, getting results out of your preaching, engaging in bhajan, having substantial personal time for your higher taste, your higher self, your ecstasies, the things that make people sublime, studying Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and relishing it. Now, if you have trouble identifying that and applying that, then it means you need a partner to hear and chant with. And that's very good to do it. If you can do so with somebody that loves you and hear and chant, then you start to experience taste, spiritual ecstasies. So these type of things destroy the lower nature, propagate the higher self, and gives realization. When you get realization, then you can give it to others. And when you give it to others, then Krishna becomes pleased and gives you more realization. So it's a preaching, relishing Krishna consciousness, bhajan, steadiness, self-control, determination to engage in the process, and preaching and giving it to other people according to your means, according to your propensities, according to your situation, but giving it out. Then you'll get reciprocation from Krishna and you'll get more realization. So the next thing is here, yet still you may think, you may start to find fault with other people. I'm together and they're spaced out. You know, you may start finding fault with people. You may start fault finding. Deceit means, well, I can do it because I'm powerful. I get away with it. You know, my sense gratification becomes divine. You know, or my disciples have to serve me and it's my sense gratification, but it's purifying for them or it's good for them. You see, examples of that. One should not accept service from other people unless you're going to give them Krishna in exchange. Or unless you're engaging them in Krishna's service directly or something. One should not accept service from them. One should think that because I'm a senior man or I'm senior in this temple, they have to serve me and it's good for them. No, that your attitude is, I am their servant. And I should serve them by giving them Krishna consciousness. And if I should try to do things myself. But if I, otherwise I can delegate things. I can delegate responsibility to them and I can try to make them responsible. And I may take service from them to encourage that, but I have to train them how to become good. So one should not be deceitful. Deceitful means you're artificial. You're saying, you're professing renunciation, but you're not following it. One should profess that level of devotional service that you can follow. And other things you may say, well, this is the opinion of the previous acharyas, I've not yet come up to that standard. Frankly, admit it. Frankly, admit it. It's not bad sometimes to frankly admit your weaknesses. Although you may do subordinates, although you may do it indirectly, or you may do it in different ways. So you have to be careful not to destroy their faith in the overall process. Well, gee, he's been 27 years chanting Hare Krishna, and if he can't do it by now, what's my chance? So you want to destroy that faith. You have to show examples of success despite weakness. See, examples of people coming back despite having fallen down. It's more important to stress the positive. Acknowledge weaknesses. Acknowledge conditioning. Yeah, about lust, I was referring to understanding the nature of Western bodies, Western conditioning, as one way of understanding that lust has an influence on Western bodies. But nowadays, as we see, that Indians' traditional cultural systems and protective systems are being jettisoned for material prosperity. Traditional symptoms of Gurukula, traditional symptoms of Shastric study, traditional systems of sattvic life style as a practical application of study. These are all being thrown away in terms of economic, technological benefits, etc., etc. So people are becoming Shudras. Shudras means women and money, wine and women and song, like that. So the strong tendency in Indian cultures, Indian cities, for Western-style sense gratification removes the Indian psychic from their spirituality of the past. Result is that they become simply cats and dogs, imported duty-free. And the result is on the psyche of the country. The country, AIDS, drug addiction, all these things that are Western side effects are imported duty-free here. Increasing alarming situations of Western phenomena such as AIDS, sexually distributed diseases, etc., are becoming rampant. It's becoming in the cities that there's no real big difference between Westerners and Indians then, if they're culturally deficient. So when we're sadhus, when we're supposed to be sadhus, it doesn't matter even if you're married, if you're proud of being a sadhu and a sadvi, and you want to set an example in Krishna consciousness across the life, you've got to be straightforward. There is no privacy. Sadhus and sadvis then, in one lecture tape is on a Govardhan Puja lecture. Prabhupada is mentioning that sadhus and sadvis have no private lives then. You may have some private life with your wife in your house or something like that, but people get to know if there is discord. People get to know if you're not Krishna conscious. People can see it on your face if you're breaking the principles privately. The face is the index of the mind. You can see it. Similarly, hypocrisy is easily evident. A bhakta leader, if he does something hypocritical, his new bhaktas may not speak about it, you know, but they can see it. They can see his hypocrisy. They can see his lack of determination. They can see his weaknesses. It's important to face up to the weaknesses and try to eliminate them. That gives more enthusiasm and strength to your subordinates than just papering it over. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur here is mentioning here, don't be deceitful. Deceit means to try to cheat the public, pretending that you're a sadhu, but wearing saffron dress when you're not up to the standard. Or accepting donations and then not utilizing it for what you said it was going to be for. That's deceitfulness. You're accepting it on the pretense of something, but you're not utilizing it for that. That burns out the donors. That burns out the people who repose their trust in you. Sadhus should have a very high level of trust by their moral standards should be very high. Otherwise, people will not trust them. And if they won't trust them, then it undermines attachment to the religious principles of the institution that you're supposed to support. So these are very delicate weeds. This is mentioned nicely in this course that I mentioned about overcoming material desires. It was there in the Gundicha Marjana section, Madhya Lila chapter 12, starting with verse number 135, where Gauranga Mahaprabhu is discussing cleansing the Gundicha temple. There are gross dirt and subtle dirt. And Mahaprabhu was encouraging devotees that were bringing big piles of dirt, chastising those who were not bringing enough dirt, etc. And so it's described in the purport there, very elaborate, long purport, different types of... There's, aside from subtle desires, such as lust, etc., which is a very major, big stumbling block. Then it mentions the heart. It says here, if the heart is filled with straw, grains of sand, weeds or dust, anyabilasa purna, if it is filled up with unwanted things, anyabilasa, other types of desires which are not conducive for Krishna consciousness, purna, filled up with that. Devotional service is anyabilasita shunya, becoming free from these unwanted desires. Now, if it is filled up with these things, one cannot sit the Supreme Personality of Godhead in that contaminated heart. He will not sit there. Amoga. When Amoga was critical of Gauranga, then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his wife said, let my daughter-in-law better become a widow than rather than have the association of this rascal who was so critical, such a fault-finding fool, and like this. And they were lamenting. However, because he was related to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya by marriage ties, and because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his wife are dear to Gauranga Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu decided to do something about this fellow. He decided to be merciful to this fellow. So later on, when he was suffering from cholera due to his aparad, due to his envious mentality, Mahaprabhu came and placed his hand on his body and said, get up, Amoga, chant the Hare Krishna mantra. You're a Brahmana by caste. Brahmana is supposed to be, heart should be pure. Why have you allowed envy and jealousness to sit there also in the heart? You must kick that out, otherwise the heart, the Krishna will not be able to sit within the heart. He was describing there. Enviousness, jealousy, etc. Move this thing away, huh? Move this thing away. So, when you allow enviousness and jealousy to sit within your heart, then the Supreme Personality of God, it will not sit there. That's all. So devotees must, there is two points of view. If there is a genuine fault, and you can do something about it, it is called a sphere of influence. There is a sphere of concern, that you may be concerned about so many things, with regards to your living situation, the society, the temple, or anything you may... Can you do anything about it? If you can't do anything about it, then why get involved? You're wasting your life. Your 24 hours of the day are too precious. Focus on the positive. Focus what you can do. You have a sphere of influence. People that listen to you, people that respect your opinion, like that. Work within that. And if you try to increase your Krishna consciousness positively, focus on the positive aspects of Krishna consciousness, focus on the positive things of devotional life, then that strengthens things so much, that strengthens the faith of the congregation so much, that even despite your own admitted, that's another thing, you're not trying to hide your defects. You're working on your defects actively, and they see that, so they don't pay attention to them so much, because your problems are your problems. But you're focusing on positive Krishna conscious aspects. And they see that, so they have faith. Because such a person is so positive, talking positively about Krishna, preaching positively about Krishna consciousness, and actively working on their anarthas and trying to be a better and better and better example, that builds faith. Alright, they're a little weak. Alright, they have this problem and that problem, but he's not letting it slide. And at the same time, he's setting a good example. So does when there is, even if a temple or an institution has its problems, if somebody can see somebody who is absorbed in Krishna consciousness, practically with their own eyes, who is not cheating, who is following practically, that goes a long way to build faith That it makes people realize that it is possible to go back to home, back to Godhead, by focusing on the positive aspects of Krishna consciousness. Now, at the same time, if there's genuine faults, you cannot close your eyes to that either. But does it do good to talk about it in the public sphere? To backbite? To talk about it? No, because that undermines the faith of other people. You may feel some pain that something horrible is being done, and no one from higher ups are doing anything to check the imbalance, to check the corruption, or check something. But you may be so bitter about it, and then you start opening your mouth. And some people that are young, innocent, new bhaktas, new bhaktins, or some innocent people, they don't need to hear such things. It is simply stopping their flow of their attraction to Prabhupada's lifestyle, Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada's movement. It makes them take shelter more of independent, whimsical attitude. It goes a long way to stop the preaching then. They don't need to hear it. See, it's subtle. If they already know about it, you must acknowledge that it exists and acknowledge that you don't agree with it and acknowledge your positive steps to deal with it. That builds their faith. You cannot slam the door on it. You're not trying to sweep the dirt underneath the carpet, but you're not trying to dwell on it. That's my point. If you dwell on fault finding, there's a saying in Bengali that if you hit a skunk, then the scent will come back on your hand. If you focus on fault finding mentality, if you focus on being overly critical, destructively critical, constructive criticism is when you take somebody on the side, not in front of the public, not to destroy the reputation of a Vaishnava or a Vaishnavi in public, but on the sidelines with some person who loves them, who has influence over them, and you deal with it then. The idea of it is because we are unpolished. We are conditioned souls. It is like our service attitude is like a rough-cut gemstone from the mind. And fine-tuning under shiksha, from shiksha gurus, diksha gurus, etc., etc., is like polishing and cutting the gemstone. Cutting this away, that away, polishing it, cutting it, examining it, cutting again and cutting again, until it becomes a brilliant diamond, suitable for appreciation and being offered to Krishna. It's not a joke. You're dealing with spirit souls and offering Krishna a garland of spirit souls in the form of new devotees that have strong faith is one of the best offerings. My godbrother Vishnu Jana Swami used to mention this, that just like you offer a garland of flowers to the Lord, many different varieties of flowers with tulsi, etc., and it becomes very pleasing, looks pleasing on the Lord's body. So similarly, spirit soul is brighter than many millions of suns, and to make a garland of such spirit souls and offer them to Krishna is a very substantial thing. One godbrother gave up his GBC post in India, his responsibilities here, and went to the West for preaching. But Prabhupada wanted him back. So he knew that. So he was actively preaching with another one of his godbrothers, chanting, preaching to people. And so they were working in Paris. One sannyasi godbrother was very good at music. So he would sing very wonderfully, moving from the heart, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, Narottam Das Thakur's bhajans. So the musician class of students, kids, when they heard that, saw the bhava that was awakening in the musical renditions of this devotee's devotional singing, they became attracted. Then they came and they took prasadam and they inquired about it more. Then this other devotee would grab them, take them around the corner, smash to pieces all their philosophical misconceptions, all of their material attachments, and force them and encourage them that you should surrender. It's good for you. It'll help you. In this way, by the nectar on one side and the smashing of their philosophical misconceptions on the other side, they were left with no alternative. So they would join. In this way, after this combination was very effective, then after they join, you have to pat them on the head. You have to encourage them. You have to, you know, continue the doses of nectar, continue the training and the positive effects so that they'll stay with you, because the first few months is very, very crucial. In this way, they took care of these boys. Then Prabhupada came. Then, so it was choreographed. You know, this devotee is very intelligent. So he knew that Prabhupada was going to be on my case, that I gave up my service in India and I've gone back to the West. So Prabhupada wanted to make sure that you're doing something substantial. So I know he's going to ask me. So I better have something for him. So Prabhupada came, and sure enough, that was definitely on his mind. This devotee knew that it was definitely weighing heavily on Prabhupada's mind, that you left that responsible post. So he came and said, what is the results of your preaching here? You've been preaching here for 2 months in America here. What's the results? Well, it's just outside the door. Well, bring it in. Huh? So the door opened and 13 boys, some of them we shaved up just the day before, you know. You should shave your head. It's really good, you know. And they came in, they offered a flower for Prabhupada, and offered obeisances and just sat there. And Prabhupada could see they were brand new bhaktas. He could see that. So as soon as Prabhupada saw that, he started to cry. Tears trickled down his eyes in happiness. And so he turned to the devotee and said, very good. Keep preaching like this. I like that. So it was a good thing. It's a good thing, initially. As long as the purity was going on, things were very good. So, you must get some standards. If you focus on the bad side, everything has its bad side. If you focus too much on the bad side, then people start to... The other end of the Bengali proverb is this. If you criticize, if you're too heavy, if you're too critical, even if it's true, if you're always on everybody's case, you know, if you set a high example, then they're forced to be quiet. In that sense, in the temple atmosphere, it's always good to have somebody that's as strong as a thunderbolt, just heavy as hell. Keep the pressure. But the person who keeps the pressure must be able to give the nectar and must set a high standard himself. Must be very strict with himself. Otherwise, everybody will fear you and they will, you know, understand. And the other person has to be soft as a rose. Be very congenial, be very tolerant, be very friendly, be very merciful. So in this way, you've got two things. Heavy as hell that keeps them strict on their toes. Discipline should not be squashed or swept away. At the same time, nectar must be given. If the person who is giving, who is hard as hell, if his personal values are less, then it becomes hypocritical. Nobody will believe it. Like, for example, in the devotional side was Jagannanda Pandit or Damodar Pandit. He was heavy as hell, even as much with Gauranga. Very critical, even to Gauranga, of Gauranga's lifestyle, for the sake of protecting Gauranga, for the sake of Gauranga's reputation. Nevertheless, it was not helpful or healthy for Damodar Pandit. Therefore, Mahaprabhu sent him to Navadvip, that you please go to Navadvip and you get on the case of all the Bengali Vaishnavas there who are in separation of me and Navadvip. When he went there, and please take this and offer my respectful obeisances to my mother and this and that, and then like told so many stories and so many things. He went there. When he went there, everybody was afraid of Damodar Pandit, and they all stayed in line. All the householder devotees of Mahaprabhu staying in Navadvip, they were all in line constantly, you know, because they were watched by Damodar Pandit. It's an example. Someone who was very devotional, very strict with himself, and very wonderful, and got good results. In one sphere, it was not good that he was finding fault with Sriman Mahaprabhu. But when he went to Bengal, he got some good results. So it doesn't mean that because one is not appropriate in one situation, it may be very appropriate in another. So it's an example of devotional constructive criticism that was intense. Damodar Pandit's constructive criticism was intense. Even at one point in Chaitanya Charita, Mahakavya, written by Murari Gupta. Murari Gupta is glorifying Lord Shiva at one point. He wrote a Shivastakam, incidentally. And he wrote Ramastakam because he's a devotee of Ramchandra. And he quoted Shivastakam, written by Gauranga, dictated by Gauranga's mouth. Shivastakam. And Murari Gupta was describing Gauranga Mahaprabhu's love for Mahadev and how at one point Mahaprabhu took the Mahaprasadam of Mahadev, where in Shastra it says you should not take any Mahaprasadam of any demigod. Except like in Jagannath Puri where they offer Jagannath's Mahaprasadam to these demigods. Then afterwards it's Jagannath's Prasadam. It cannot be contaminated by offering to Durga, Shiva or anybody else, Ganapati or anyone. It's Jagannath's Mahaprasadam, so it's accepted. But you cannot take bhoga and directly offer it to the demigods and take that Mahaprasadam with the demigods. That's against Vaishnava principles. So, when Damodar Pandit heard that my Prabhu has taken the Mahaprasadam of Shiva, how is that? because the Nandi, because of the fighting with Virabhadra, Lord Shiva's carrier, fighting with the Brahmanas, headed by Bhrigu Muni, and when the sacrifice of Daksha, there was cursing and counter-cursing. One of the counter-curses was that anyone who Virabhadra said, anyone who derides Lord Shiva, then they'll be fallen. Then Bhrigu Muni counter-cursed that anyone who worships this Lord Shiva like this, he'll become separated from Lord Vishnu. He'll not be able to understand Lord Vishnu if he worships. Something like this. By taking the prasad and worshiping Mahadevi, you'll not advance. Something like this. I forgot the exact curse. So, Damodar Pandit opined, because Damodar Pandit asked, why, how is it that our Prabhu can do this? It sounds like it's outside of Vaishnava realm. So, Murari Gupta said, if you see Lord Shiva as the Mahavaishnav, and if you're worshipping as a Vaishnava, then taking his remnants means the Mahaprasadam of a Vaishnava, and it's allowed. However, if you see him to be something which is separate from Krishna, you see him as an entity, as a demigod, separate from Krishna, and you worship him with the mood of a separatist, just to spite the Vaishnavas. I will become a Shivite. I'll worship Lord Shiva. And you have maintained a spiteful attitude against the Vaishnavas and against Lord Vishnu under the plea of affection for Lord Shiva. Then the curse of Bhrigu Muni becomes effective. Anybody who takes the Mahaprasadam of this person will become finished. Lower, become degraded, absorbed in the mode of ignorance and suffering. The curse of Bhrigu Muni becomes effective if you see it. Otherwise, if you see him as a Vaishnava, and if you see that his association is suitable for developing love for Krishna and associating him in this way, like the Prachetas and the Srimad Bhagavatam are an example, how they receive Lord Shiva, and how Lord Shiva blessed them and encouraged them by the Rudra Gita, examples of that. If you see Mahadev as the best Vaishnava, then his association is only uplifting. And his prasadam is only purifying. Like that. So Mahaprabhu showed by his example how to discriminate in this way. And Damodar Pandit became very pleased. Because otherwise he's very, very critical of the behavior of our Prabhu, Srimad Mahaprabhu. He must be always the best example amongst the sannyasis. Otherwise his reputation will go down. So we have to keep up the pressure. Constructive criticism is not bad. Providing the motivation is that this person must be liberated. We cannot tolerate his fall down, or allowing him slip slowly toward fall down. We cannot tolerate it. So you're always constructively critical with an idea to love the person and bring him up. Like that. Out of affection. Constructive criticism out of affection is appreciated, but it must be given in doses that can be eaten properly. You cannot drown the person in too much, otherwise they cannot accept it. It has to be given incrementally. It must be given by someone who is appropriate to give the medicine. Another aspect of it is if you trade that somebody is a Vaishnava and they're sincere, although they have these faults, ultimately Krishna will do something about it. Krishna, who wants to see his devotee advance, will do something about it. The devotee will be corrected eventually, or the pressure of the constructive criticizers will be sufficient enough to force the person to change, or Krishna, as the supreme judge, will remove him. If he's actually unqualified, fallen, Krishna will remove him. And for the meantime, Krishna has him in such and such post, so Krishna must have some plan. So this is why many different reasons why Raghunath Bhatta Goswami would not criticize even when something was valid, even sometimes when criticism was valid. He did not want to spread prajal, but he wanted to stress the positive, and because Krishna is the supreme judge of things. Krishna is the supreme authority. Like that. So these are very substantial aspects. If you talk too much bad about so many things, then you will cause people to start thinking, well, he's always bad-mouthing women, and he's always bad-mouthing this and that. maybe he's agitated. Or he's always, you know, getting on somebody's case like this. But maybe he's, you know, then they will be more interested. They will watch you more. Maybe he's loose in this way. Or maybe he's hypocritical in that way. So it is best to be positive. Because if you hit the skunk, Prabhupada mentioned this about this, that don't criticize people by name. Specifically famous persons. Like in Bengal, there were some famous so-called sadhus who do welfare work for the public, and therefore they're very popular. But spiritually, they're very corrupted, or they may have very low values. So, but yet, because they're popular in the public eye, you cannot criticize them by name. Otherwise, it'll cause people to lose whatever little affection they have for your institution. So don't say anything unnamed. If somebody would ask Prabhupada, do you know so-and-so? Prabhupada would say, who? What? Who? So-and-so, surely you've heard of him. No, I haven't read much these days. I don't know anything. Don't give them any undue importance. Well, anyway, what's their philosophy? The guy would mention his philosophy and Prabhupada would smash it. Don't smash the person by name. What is his philosophy? Smash that. Otherwise, if you criticize somebody by name, then you will call criticism on yourself. If you hit the skunk, then the smell stays in your hand. The skunk, animal, if it sprays your dog, then you have to bathe the dog for days, you know? And if it hits your cloth, you have to burn it. There's no recourse. If the skunk smell hits your cloth, you have to burn it. There's no way you'll get that cloth. The smell will always stay in that cloth. There's no way to get it out. You have to burn it. There's no way out. So don't allow yourself to be getting in a strange situation where undue criticism will come back on you. You may think you're doing the society good by pointing out being a watchdog, barking at the heels of the wrongdoers. But if it does not make you advance, this happened in our movement. So genuinely, in the 80s, our senior leaders had some genuine faults, which recently the body has admitted. But just because it was so fault, those who were attached to finding fault with them, exposing their faults, at the same time they did it with a passionate zeal, like a reformist type of zeal. We want reform in ISKCON, so much so that we will argue, we will fight tooth and nail, and we will talk bad about them. You know, and like this, in order to undermine them and this and that. At the same time, the persons who were fault finders, they did not take time for their own bhajan, their own Krishna conscious bhajan, even though they were right, even though all their criticisms were intellectually correct. But they were so busy presenting that to the rest of the society and members that so-and-so is off the wall and bogus and this and that, everything like this. They were so busy saying that and so passionately made that their platform. They did not take care of their own Shraddha, their own spiritual life, their own chanting of 16 rounds, their own Krishna bhajan. As a result, both of them fell down. The person who was so stubborn refused to admit his corruption, refused to admit his bogus activity. He fell down because he was too proud of his prestige, of his situation. He fell down because he refused to become humble, refused to acknowledge like this due to false prestige, false pride. He fell down. And the other guy who was criticizing, he fell down because he was committing Vaishnava Aparad, not seeing the good that that other Vaishnava was actually doing, even though he was also defective. Both of them fell down. You don't win by criticizing Vaishnavas. Even if it's genuine, you try to do constructive criticism and make sure your own bhajan does not suffer as a result. For this reason, I asked one other senior sannyasi that was a very expert watchdog in our movement. Very sharp. His own bhajan and sadhana are really staunch. Very firm. Nobody can say a word about his own sadhana. He's exemplar. Amazing. And his contribution to the society is unquestionable. And therefore, you would think his influence as a watchdog was amazing. Nipping at the heels of various authorities for their different defects. But yet he stopped. And I said, why? And he said, if they don't listen, then they have to learn the hard way. I'm not going to let it stop my bhajan. I'm not going to let it stop my Krishna bhajan. I desisted from being a watchdog, nipping at their heels, because I saw I wasn't getting anywhere. What is the use? Even if it's true, if you're not going to get any substantial results, why waste your breath? Better to let Krishna slap them. I was compassionate trying to protect them from Krishna's slap, but they will have to get it. They will have to get it. I tried my best. But I'm not going to let it stop my bhajan. He commented to me very nicely. So, you may think you're doing a good to point out somebody's defects. If you're not careful enough, you have to make sure your own bhajan is solid. And if it's not, then it should not become the platform of called Gutte Pore Gobar Hase, that the wet cow dung is laughing at the dry cow dung, not knowing that he'll become dry and he'll also be put in the fire. So that's important. That's important. So we have to be... Constructive criticism means it has to be done behind the scenes. Positive community development means you glorify everybody's commitment, however insignificant and small. Glorify it in public. Even your detractors, even your enemies, if they did something right, acknowledge it. That will go a long way in smoothing relationships, even with people that don't agree with you. The way you are, the way you manage, the way you do things. Acknowledge their positive devotional service. Acknowledge it publicly. And if you see something that is serious, fine-tune behind closed doors. With those that are concerned, or with those that have the ability to make a positive commitment and to the person who is the defect. Don't denigrate the reputation of a Vaishnava or a Vaishnavi in public. It only destroys your creeper. In Chaitanya Bhagavat especially, it's described about Vaishnava Aparada specifically. If you commit Vaishnava Aparada, you become destroyed. And Gauranga Mahaprabhu will not glance on you favorably. You become destroyed. If a Vaishnava, it mentions by Vrindavan Das Thakur, two Vaishnavas have a disagreement. Don't enter in between it. If you enter in between the disagreement, you know, two warring parties of Vaishnavas over something, your spiritual advancement will become ruined, Vrindavan Das Thakur says. Don't enter in between two warring parties of Vaishnavas. He mentions it specifically. Your advancement will be ruined. If there is in one sense, you can't slam the door on constructive criticism. And you may have a privately held opinion. But don't... if you criticize Vaishnavas, then Mahaprabhu will not be pleased. That's the bottom line. It's very delicate. Very interesting. Once it see that Krishna will do the needful, if somebody's actually offending Vaishnavas or is not up to standard or is cheating, duplicitous activity, hypocrisy, exploiting the masses of people, misusing funds for sense gratification in the plea of service, Krishna will deal with them. Krishna will give them their slap. It's a very delicate balance. You cannot allow corruption. You cannot close your eyes to it because you're becoming an accomplice to the crime. At the same time, if you dwell on it too much, it may compromise your bhajan. Nothing should compromise your bhajan. In any ashram, nothing should compromise your bhajan. You have to face realities. Dealing with Mr. Lust or anything like this. You have to face realities. So that is, now, we're going to discuss this. I've given a practical analysis of this verse. Like that. A practical analysis of this verse. Now, we're going to read a little bit more. It's very wonderful. The opening paragraph is very brilliant by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The verse gives advice to those who've been able to subdue lust and anger, but have failed to vanquish the great enemy of deceit. Deceit means you're a cheating cheating, hypocrisy. Saying one thing, doing another. Upholding the philosophy, upholding the principles of devotional life, whereas being loose yourself. That's called deceit. All right? So now it says here, the sadhaka has the three kinds. The svanishta, devoted to self-realization, specifically his own. Svanishta. Nishta is faith, firm faith. Sva means own. Your own faith. Parinishta, dedicated to rules and regulation. Nishta means here in this case, faith for the benefit of others. Pari, above. So, for the guidance of the public, we're interested in rules and regulations to guide moral codes, to guide the society. And I'm interested in applying it, understanding it, and preaching about it. This is called Parinishta. Third is Nirapeksha, detached. So, the Svanishta Sadhaka, this is a description. He's defining it now. Rejects all principles of Varnashram Dharma, endeavors solely to satisfy the Supreme Lord Hari. I mean, the principles of Varnashram Dharma means attachment to becoming overly absorbed in Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, becoming overly absorbed in Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. If somebody wants to live like that, but is devoid of attachment to devotees, devoid of association to devotees, what is the good? Prahlad Maharaj mentions this very nicely in the 7th canto. A person may have all the 12 qualities of a brahmana, but if he's not a devotee, then a chandala, a dog eater, who is a Vaishnava, is better. Svapacho varishtam, it says there. A person who is born as a dog eater in a low-class family, who serves sadhus, who lives with sadhus, who's become detached to the Supreme, is better. Even if somebody may be very proud of his 12 brahminical qualities, but if he's not a Vaishnava, then he's not as good as a low-class person who is conscious of his low-class life, who is very careful with himself to always serve Krishna with sincerity. They're better. In Mathura Mahatmya is a funny statement by Rupa Goswami, where he says, you may have a brahmana who knows the 4 Vedas, he says, and they may live outside of Mathura. Then you may have a brahmana who lives within Mathura, but he may not know the 4 Vedas. You should ignore the brahmana well-versed in the 4 Vedas and feed the brahmana who lives in Mathura. Rupa Goswami says that. One who lives and is attached to Mathura, you may not be so expert, but you're attached to Krishna and you live in Mathura and you're serving. Feed that person. And then respect that person. You may be very expert in the 4 Vedas. You live outside Mathura and you may be very proud of it. That person is not as significant as one who is attached to Krishna, living in the Dham. Of course, living in Mathura means also living within the heart, within the mind, like that, as we mentioned before. If somebody lives outside of Mathura but is preaching and behaving properly like that, then that shows how Mahaprabhu preached outside of Vrindavan, Varanasi, many places, South India, delivering so many people, encouraging them to have the Vrindavan Mathura Bhava within. But it's an interesting instruction there. So Prahlad Maharaj mentions you may have the 12 qualities of a brahmana, but if you're not a Vaishnava, then it's not substantial. So here, it says, Svanishtha Sadhaka rejects all principles of Varnashram and endeavors solely to satisfy Hari. Addicted to self-realization. And anything that stands in the way of self-realization should be rejected. Our platform in from Bhakti Vinod Thakur to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur down to our Guru Maharaj is the attempt to establish Daivi Varnashram Dharma. Understanding that people may be Shudras inherently, but engage them somehow or another in Krishna's service. They may be administrators. They may be attached to that. Engage them in doing something for Krishna. They may be farmers, and they're attached to that. Engage them in Krishna consciousness somehow. They may be teacher class. Encourage them to teach about Krishna consciousness in some way or other. To inject Krishna consciousness some way or other. This way they become purified. The 4 varnas become purified. But ultimately, devoid of attachment to God consciousness, it's not divine. It's not daiva. Daiva varnashram dharma means Krishna is in the center. Preached, actively placed, considered. And everything goes around him. This is the meaning of daiva varnashram dharma. Not everybody is going to come up to the same standard. But they must all realize and respect that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the goal of life is to love him. They may have different degrees of application. That's daiva varnashram. Now, if someone sees that somebody may be very proud of being in varnashram, but they're not attached to Krishna, then there's no use. People that are the brahmanas that were very much attached to their prestige. In India, the caste system was very powerful, and it's only been more or less dismantled within the last 50 years. But unfortunately, they did not dismantle it with Krishna in the center. They've dismantled it, and now everybody's become a dog. That's the problem. And those who were smart, brahminical, intelligent, they just got out of the country. They just ran somewhere else. And they continued to follow dharmic principles in foreign countries and like that. And some of them became degraded, but some of them continued to be very dharmic, very religious, and they're very well-to-do. Compared, if they weren't appreciated in their home country, then they just simply left. That's all. And let the lower class ruffians control everything and let it all go to the dogs. Basically, that's what they've allowed to happen. So that's one aspect of it. Now, if you see that somebody may be very attached to varnashram, but they're not Krishna conscious, then Svandish the Sadhaka said it's a waste of time. They prefer to insulate themselves and absorb themselves in bhajan. All right? And they'll criticize those who are attached to family life, to materialistic jobs and education, as subtly wasting their time. Their life is going down. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has many, many bhajans, many, many instructions criticizing external things. So that is svanista. Those who are attached to self-realization, it does not matter if they're householders or not. All right? Now, next. Now it mentions here, he organizes his life to conform to the rules of devotional service and deity worship. All right? That's quite clear. And they're attached to rules and regulations of devotional life. That's quite clear. Now, deity worship is a part and parcel of that. Developing a higher taste. So these two sadhakas, the first, Svanishta and Parinishta, these two are generally householders. Now the third type, he says, is the Nirapeka. Their detached devotee is renunciate and celibate. They have nothing to do with women. They got nothing to do with household life. Either from the platform of convenience, or they're just not part of their nature. They're just not born for it. They're not destined for it. Their life is easier that way, and by self-analysis, they're not fit for that style, lifestyle anyway, so they avoided it. Now, all three would do well to renounce deceitfulness because deceit and pretense devastate spiritual understanding. It means you have to practice what you preach and you have to behave properly in any station. Otherwise, it destroys the spiritual process. It's ecstatic how Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the next paragraphs, how he describes very candidly and frankly how you cheat in either of these three situations are very crystal clear. This is why I like, because most of the devotees in our movement on the platform of Vaidhi Bhakti Sadhana have to deal very concretely. These shlokas are all wonderful from shloka 1. But specifically, I think the core of our practicality in terms of our own aspects of anartha nivritti, these shloka yesterday, the shloka today, 6, then the shloka number 7 and 8 are very, very realistically practical. Very tangible instructions that can be applied now. Therefore, I think they are very significant. This thing here, it mentions, it's ecstatic. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He indulges in sense gratification in the name of satisfying the Supreme Lord. Instead of serving pure-hearted devotees, he serves rich and influential materialists and busies himself in accumulation of wealth beyond his needs. then in every institution has this problem. In Reminiscences of One Disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta, that's the upcoming portion of a book about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's institution and glories. That's coming up, that's going to be published probably in December by Bhakti Vikash Maharaj. And it's Reminiscences of One Householder Vaishnava, Disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who left about 5 years ago. In that he mentions the wonderful aspects of the early days of Gaudiya Math, Gaudiya Mission under Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Wonderful examples of amazing devotees whose bhajan and sadhana were so exalted and so amazing. So, whether they were householders or whether they were sannyasis or brahmacharis, astoundingly exalted examples, he describes. Then, scandals. He describes how some of them collecting money would do so in the most scandalous ways. No, and they were attached to that. It was part of their nature. They just tried to dovetail it with their institution. And some of it made Bhaktisiddhanta furious. One man, I'll give you an example of this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions it here without describing any names. Serves rich and influential materialists and busies himself in accumulation of wealth beyond the needs. Okay? So, one sadhu and their mission wanted to collect some donations from a group of merchants in a town. So he went to the collector. Collector is the big manager of the city, you know, the big city. Governmental post. Sometimes it's a deputy magistrate and the collector are the same person. So he said, he was a pious man, so it said, look, I'd like you to come, why don't you come around with me and let's visit some merchants and collect donations on behalf of the mutt. So the man said, look, I'm not going to get myself involved. I don't want to be partial. Because I'm a public servant, you know, I can't show my partiality so much. Plus, if somebody wants to give you a donation, they should do so willingly. So, I don't want to favor, so much undue favor, so they will look like they're being forced to give. So he understood that, so he said, no, I'm not going to put my finger, I'm not going to come with you, like that. Then the sadhu says, well, look, all right, then do me a favor, will you? All right, what do you want? Can I borrow your car so that I can be dropped to the railway station? And that way I can go home. Back to the mud. All right. Okay. So he jumped in the car and he went down through the bazaar and he parked the car within vision of so many merchants. And he got out of the car and he ran around collecting donations. So the merchant thought, uh-oh, he's been sent by the collector. So the collector didn't come with him physically, but by his car, he thought he's already favored this man so much, so out of fear they all gave. And he you know, huge amounts, stacks of cloth, you know, 300 dhotis, kurtas, bundis, so many supplies. And he brought it to Bhaktisiddhanta. When Bhaktisiddhanta saw that, he was furious. He said, you've intimidated all these merchants to give donations, thinking that the collector has done this. This is pretense. This is deceitful. You have not collected the donation correctly. Now go back to, he made a team of brahmacharis. They went out and explained the situation to each and every one of the donors. And they said, look, don't try to think that, you know, the collector is on our side and you've been intimidated. We want to inform you that you have the right to take your donation back if you're not giving it from the heart. They volunteered to give it all back to them. How much this merchants agreed to give after that, I would say. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was furious. Whereas another sannyasi went out for Bhikshu Madhukari and he would collect something very, very simple. From merchants, vegetables, fruits, dal, this, that, whatever it was, money. And he would come back with his yukti, you know, with his cloth, and he would go in front of his guru and give it all. Whatever vegetables, whatever rice, whatever money, whatever he donated. He went out. Madhukari Bhiksha from different shops or different people. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very pleased. He says, so-and-so Maharaj's Bhikshu is very sattvic. Like that. He is much in the mode of goodness. He was very pleased. Quantity is not the question. Quality is. Later on, there was a clash between the intellectual wing of the society that was writing books, assisting Bhaktisiddhanta writing books. And other party said, look, you guys are just bookworms, you're just studying the Shastras and helping Guru Maharaj write his books, but you're not as important as us. Because without us, we're collecting the cash. Guru Maharaj cannot preach. We cannot keep the doors of the institution open without our fundraising. So we are more important. So when they were boastful and puffed up, Guru Maharaj cannot preach without us. Very interestingly. Then Bhaktisiddhanta, oh yes? He said, you think so? Because they were, you know, sometimes Bengali devotees can be very boastful and proud and private, you know, with each other. They were boasting. Guru Maharaj cannot preach without us. We're collecting the cash. So he stopped them all from going out. From today, no collection. Nobody will go out of the collection. You all stay back in the mutt for 15 days. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself went out on Madhukari Bhiksha that day. Went out. He went out to certain merchants and certain people. And then he came back to the mutt. And when he did, then for the next 15 days, automatically so many donations of grains and ghee and this and was coming in the mutt. You just sit and do bhajan, you all you collectors, you know. And they just sat and they were watching how Radharani was sending so many different grains, ghee, everything the mutt needed for the next 15 days. And Bhaktisiddhanta just continued with his workers, you know, with his writing his books and going on like that. So they were struck with wonder. They had to shut their mouth. This disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta who was giving the reminiscences, they had to be quiet now. They were silenced. They were dumbstruck. They realized that ultimately we are the instrument. We may be collecting whatever money and whatever facility for the institution, but Radharani is utilizing us. We have no right to become proud over it. We have no right to become proud over it. So this is interesting. I gave you a practical example of deceit. There. Another example of this was one queen. Previously, the royal culture in India were given preference. They maintained many religious institutions, gave donations, etc., etc., up to 1956, really. And even in ISKCON, here in the early days, in 75, 73, etc., preaching in India, the royal order, the former princely order, were still very quite wealthy, and they patronized ISKCON, became members, gave donations very nicely, some of them. Some of the ex-royal order. Now they're just simply businessmen, really, or politicians. So, one queen came from one district in Orissa or Bengal. One sannyasi wanted to give some preferential treatment to this queen who visited the mutt. So he told this young boy, see, he was giving his reminiscence. He was only a kid, you know, then at that age. That you go and you give this queen a mango. Okay? So, but he thought, how can I give this queen a mango when we're distributing prasadam? Everybody's supposed to get prasadam equally, right? And if I show preference to her by giving her a mango and the other people, they don't have a mango, then it's going to look bad. But this sannyasi gave him a hard time, started abusing him verbally, you know, because he was attached to his idea of showing some special respect to this queen. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur heard it and became angry. And he called that sannyasi over and said, are you a sannyasi of this such and such kingdom? Or are you a sannyasi of the Gaudiya Mutt? Who are you a sannyasi of? Blasted him. Then out of affection, whenever this sannyasi was referred to by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he called him the Auli Rani Swami. Our Auli Rani Swami has done this, or Auli Rami. Means he gave him a bad name, so bad, he refused to let him forget it. By joking in this way, the spiritual master, by joking about this disciple, from that day on, he was never called his proper sannyas name by his Guru Maharaj. The other devotees, out of fear of him, might have referred to him in his proper name. All right? But the spiritual master never called him by his name that he gave him at his time of his sannyas. He always called him the Auli Rani Swami. Never to let that disciple forget that he made that mistake. To never forget it. Another disciple who went to the Himalayas to worship Lord Shiva, previously was a Shivite. So when he displeased Bhaktisiddhanta, then he thought, I have to do some prayaschita or something like this, some tapasya, to get my guru's favor again. So he went to the Himalayas without telling anybody, ran off, went to the Himalayas, worshipped Lord Shiva, to try to please Lord Shiva so that his Guru Maharaj may be satisfied. When he came back, where did you go? Where did you disappear for so long? then Bhaktisiddhanta was furious, and so he took away his sannyas. Then later on, half a day later, that devotee came crying back to Guru Maharaj, "Oh, please, Guru Maharaj, this, that, the other thing." So Guru Maharaj gave him back his danda, but he changed his name to Giri Maharaj. Giri means mountain. So everybody from now on, when they refer to him as Giri Maharaj, they'll always remember, "Oh, you're the one who left the mud and went off to the mountains to meditate on Lord Shiva." In this way, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, although compassionate upon his disciples, did not tolerate pretense, deceit. You cannot tolerate corruption in an institution. You cannot tolerate, for somebody who's in an authority and respect, you cannot tolerate it. You must deal with it effectively. So, it's an example. It's a very wonderful, it's hilarious. When you read the account, it's hilarious. All these are wonderful, you know, opening and things. How, in the modern day, how Bhaktisiddhanta dealt with deceit in positive ways, in effective ways. So, if you want to satisfy and favor rich people, just to get some money or something like that, then that's how Svanistha Sadaka becomes deceitful. With the excuse of educating himself, he develops attachment to speculation and logic, going back to home, back to college. That's an example. And to tell you frankly, it's backfiring. Many people, I've discussed it a lot, many of them that think that we may improve our preaching by going back to college, that many of them are becoming very dissuaded by it. Because the college system many times destroys Shraddha. They commit offenses to divine literatures, you know, by their faithless analysis. And their criticism does not allow them to develop Shraddha in the speaker. You know? Because they have a tendency of ekajatiya, that we're all the same. They don't develop respect for the speaker or respect for the lecturer, you know? Because it's just a post, you know, the professors are a post or whatever like that. So it's an example. Putting on the robes of a renunciate, he strives for worldly acclaim and honor. Okay? Bhaktivinoda Thakur in one bhajan says about this cheating. And in Kalyan Kalpataru, he says, Loye sadubesh hoye upadesha e baromayaranga. He says that I'm a cheater, but now I'm putting on a saffron dress and I'm proclaiming myself qualified to be a teacher. This is really Maya's play. A baro Maya, Maya Raranga. This is really a big play of Maya. A big sporting of Maya. The innocent public may not know it. See, this sloka leads us to the next sloka. All these three slokas are wonderfully interconnected. The previous sloka, sloka 5, and sloka 6 and sloka 7 are wonderfully interconnected. Wonderfully interconnected. Next, now it says here, the Parinishtha Sadhaka becomes deceitful when he makes an external show of strict adherence, but inwardly is attracted to material subjects completely unrelated to Krishna and prefers the association of worldly-minded to saintly souls. This is intense. We've seen that in our own society, how persons of repute, people that developed a very big amount of disciples, big prestige, yet they remove themselves from their peers. Constructive criticism of their god brothers. They preferred to preach lonely, staying away from their god brothers. And they did not hear the constructive criticism of others. They fell down. It's an example. So, now, externally, are very strict. You may be very too strict with others, and externally you show like you're following the principles, but later on, when they fall down, later on, they fall down because it showed that it was all a facade. Internally, they were very much struggling. Internally, they were very much struggling with their mind and senses and sense objects. It meant that they were just toting the party line and putting up, showing a show bottle renunciation without genuinely having it. And they have to be very careful. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu also warns it in the 64 angas. It's called Bahushishakaranatyaga, one should not accept too many disciples, because you have to do your own bhajan. You have to do your own spiritual life. You have to make sure that your disciples must see you advance. So don't accept too many. And Ega Kali Bahu Karma Karanatyaga, 49, 48 and 49, back to back. Don't try to do too many things at one time. Eka Kali, at one time, Bahu Karma, many things, Karanatyaga, to do it, one should give it up. The attachment to do too many things, take on too many jobs, too many tasks, too many, become a member of too many committees, too much responsibility. Some members of our society, in their passion for prestige and accepting posts, they did 5 men's jobs inadequately. Or maybe for some time they did it, they organized it, they delegated it, and they retained 5 men's posts. And for a time it looked like it was going on all right. But internally, the person was just working hard to maintain the infrastructure and didn't have time for their own budget. The result is their heart became hard. They did not become soft to the constructive criticisms of devotees who genuinely loved them. And as a result, they fell down. So it is better to do one man's job perfect. This is what our movement, the reform pace of our movement is moving and moving more in that direction. Do one job correctly. What is the job am I fit for? Do that job nicely. And not accept another job, even though I know how to do it. Better to leave that job for somebody else. Or you may accept it temporarily, but you must get out of it. There must be a light at the end of the tunnel. You cannot accept a responsibility, even though you can do it. But if it's not helpful for your spiritual life, if it's not helpful for the spiritual life of those who take shelter of you, who are dependent upon you, then you must get out of it within a specific time frame. It cannot be open-ended. Otherwise, it destroys one's spiritual advancement. So this is interesting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions it, and we've seen it very practically, not only in our institution, other institutions, both material and spiritual, non-government institutions. Very practical. These instructions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur are concrete. Here in this thing. Internally addicted. Only those who live with you can sometimes see your internal addiction to material desires or material things. For that purpose, for one's own benefit, one should always keep yourself with witnesses. And try to live with witnesses so people can see your attachments. And also by living, as we mentioned, as I quoted that shloka from Garuda Purana, svanichesu sududevesu vina sangam na puryate, without association with people more advanced than yourself, you cannot become liberated. Without regarding them, that is called anugatya, following in the footsteps of your predecessors or your superiors. You must show how you are following in the footsteps of your predecessors. That is called anugatya. Then, svanicheshu, then you must show mercy to those who are depending upon you for their spiritual life. You must instruct them. You must free their doubts. You must give them time. You must help them. Otherwise, your life becomes superficial. It becomes a joke. Or it becomes ganakusht. The knowledge becomes bottled up within you, and ultimately, if you don't utilize it, if you don't distribute it, you become useless. It goes away. The knowledge will disappear. If you don't use it, you lose it. Same thing like with mundane education. You may have been very good in mathematics, chemistry, biology, any type of mundane subject matter. But after your graduation is over, if you don't utilize it in your job and your daily lifestyle, what happens to it? Very quickly, within 1 year, half a year, everything is forgotten. Bhuljao. Everything is forgotten. If you don't utilize it, you lose it. So the same thing. Understand your priorities, drink the nectar that you need to preserve your spiritual life, and after becoming spiritual, enlivened by it, give it to others. And by giving it to others, you increase your realizations of the subject matter. This is what's nice about giving seminars, is that sometimes by giving the same seminar 6, 7, 8 times, each time you give the seminar, you build on it from where you left off. So it's nice. Learn something, teach others. Prabhupada told Burijan. So that's a nice thing. So I want to hurry up on this paragraph. So, a parinistha sadhaka attached to rules and regulations. If you don't keep yourself with your peers, who are the, then they can't see you're allowing anybody to see your defects or see your own material attachments. Everybody can improve. Examples of that, even in our line, we see Rupa and Sanatan, how Sanatan Goswami was fine-tuning even Rupa. Examples of that, when Radharani got the chance to serve by giving all types of food preparations to Rupa, and he made a big feast for his brother. And then Sanatan said, oh, you've committed a great blunder. You've accepted service from Radharani. You know, like that. Even in, up to Prema Bhakti, there's always somebody to push you higher. Even in the level of Paramahamsa, there's still somebody who's a better Paramahamsa. These stages of advancement, Kanistha, Madhyam, and Uttam, which are mentioned in the first shlokas of this book, there are three different levels. There are basically three different levels of each. So there's always somebody that inspires you. No matter how advanced you are, or no matter how fallen you are. All right, so I think we better stop here. We'll take up the rest tomorrow.